Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hi, friends. This is Adam Borneman with the Ministry Collaborative, and once again, able to sit down with my friend Elizabeth Lynn. And we've already spoken quite a bit about the value, importance, and emerging practices around facilitation. And I would encourage you to go back and listen to that wonderful episode to get a framework for that conversation. But I wanted to spend a few minutes here specifically focusing on Elizabeth's work with the Lake Institute for Faith and Giving, which we alluded to before, but it deserves a more in-depth conversation. So, Elizabeth, good to be with you again.
Yeah, wonderful to talk with you again, Adam.
And I know you did this before, but could you again summarize for us your role with the Lake Institute for Faith and Giving?
Yes, glad to. I am directing a project. It's a grant-funded project, graciously funded by Lilly Endowment Incorporated, and it's called Shifting Ground because it focuses on the shifting landscape of faith and giving in American society in the recognition that religious leaders and lay leaders and community leaders, philanthropic leaders, everybody's standing on this ground, but we don't always have a chance to really look at how it is shifting and changing. We need to be able to do that, I think, to lead well. So the goal of the project is to develop resources to help religious leaders and community and philanthropic leaders talk about the ways in which faith and giving are changing in order to spur new imagination and action that is strategic and effective.
I'll just voice the question that I think every listener is asking in their head right now. What do pastors and congregations need to know about the shifting ground of faith and giving?
Well, probably a lot more than I already know, but I'll start off with what I do know. This is an area that we actually need to understand better. But one thing we know from research on giving in the United States is that participation in giving is changing. And it's declining in some significant ways. So you may pick up your paper every so often and see new study shows that charitable giving grew 5% in the last year. And you may be thinking, you know, it doesn't feel like that in my own setting. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel like I'm not doing this well. I'm not fundraising well and makes me anxious. Well, the reality is that that growth is accompanied by a declining number of givers. So over the last 20 years, the percentage of households participating in giving has dropped below 50%, from two-thirds of households to now less than 50%. At the same time, the pot of giving is growing. What this means is that there are fewer givers, but those givers are giving more. So if there are four words to remember in all of this, it's those: fewer givers, giving more. That means that the folks who are giving, think of a Mackenzie Scott, a Bill Gates, are giving much more, but many of us are no longer participating in giving as a habit of our lives. This puts a lot of stress on institutions that are dependent on pledges and gifts. And it also puts stress on those who are giving, because they can understandably have anxiety that they are increasingly supporting the organization and that others are not coming alongside. So that might be something that folks recognize happening in their own congregations.
As you say that, I can't help but think about just the broader macroeconomic trends that we see in the country. And I'm not an economist, but I pretend to be one on this podcast. The fewer givers giving more strikes me as well aligned with what's happening in the broader economic world that we're in. So from your perspective, or from the perspective of this team that you're working with, what are those points of alignment? What are you seeing against the broader backdrop?
Yeah, that's very interesting. The Lilly Family School of Philanthropy, which I would highly recommend as a resource for research on patterns of giving, has looked at the decline in household participation in giving and has found that it does align in part with growing income inequality, that some folks feel they just don't have the resources available to give. But perhaps a larger percentage of the change is related to a growing distrust of institutions. Mm. So this goes back to the conversation we had about facilitation and building trust. There is increasing distrust of institutions. And so people are like, well, I don't really know that I should give what I have because it's not going to be well used. And how am I going to track that over time? And all of the transparency and annual reports in the world is not going to change that dynamic in the ways that we would hope.
Yeah, this was especially highlighted recently at an event that both you and I attended at Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary, this symposium on philanthropy in the Black church, which clearly focused on the Black church context, but had enormous implications well beyond that. And that's one of the things that stuck with me, is that how giving to movements in comparison to giving to institutions has changed quite a bit. Is that along the lines of what you're seeing?
Yes. Lake Institute on Faith and Giving co-hosted this symposium on philanthropy in the Black church with Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary in April. And I think both partners are hoping to continue the conversation because it feels so crucial.
Yes, it should.
For the future, both of the Black church and the society that many philanthropic organizations are seeking to develop. But there is an increasing, alongside the distrust of institutions, there's an increasing interest in funding issues mm-hmm. or causes or movements directly. And you see that in crowdfunding or kickstart funding mm-hmm. and the sort of, I want to give in the moment and I want to give to this person or this cause, but I don't want to give to support an institution. That feels like a bit of a challenge for congregations as they might think about engaging with philanthropic organizations, because congregations understandably think of themselves as institutions whose sort of long-term life and continuity is crucial to living out the call of the gospel and the ministries that they are seeking. So how do congregations connect with philanthropic individuals and organizations that are thinking in terms of issues rather than institutions?
Yeah, you just there raised the question that I was about to ask, and that is the implications then for congregations in this very complex web of giving and philanthropy and grant writing. And I mean, there's so much to all of this. What is clear is that congregations need to think very differently about how they practically go about this. And it will be different from context to context.
Yes.
I think that's clear. But where are you seeing pastors or congregations experimenting in ways that make sense, experimenting in ways that are seeing this reality most clearly?
I think that I see examples of this all over, but it is very, very context dependent. I think that at the core is steady engagement in relationships with other organizations, mm-hmm. other congregations, and other institutions and local community funders in your own context. That to the extent that congregations can begin to build those relationships and work with other congregations on areas of common concern, new things can happen. You know, there's things happening in the field of philanthropy that congregations could naturally align with. Mm-hmm. But if we're not reading the Chronicle of Philanthropy, if we're not going to community foundation forums and getting to know our community foundation leaders and seeking out relationships with folks who are giving to other causes than one's own congregation, we're not going to know about those. So can I just give a quick example?
Of course.
There's interesting growing research on the importance of spirituality to health. So Columbia University has a whole institute. I won't try to bungle the name by pronouncing the institute, but Lisa Miller is the researcher who leads it. Columbia University's institute shows that there's a direct correlation between spirituality and health. Hospital systems, health systems are aware of that research, and they're thinking about, well, how do we work on the whole health of individuals and communities? They are beginning to be in conversation with foundations on this issue. And sometimes there are partnerships brokered that engage congregations as places with expertise in spirituality and the development of spirituality. So I think that's an example of what can happen if you can get out into conversation with folks outside your own bubble.
Yeah, that is such a good point and a very concrete piece of advice for ministry leaders to start building those relationships and having those conversations locally. I think that is one of the biggest shifts. If I look back at the history of mainline Protestant institutions, which is what I would know best, and that is, you know, for a long time, you have your per capita and you send all your money to the institution and they send it to a missionary somewhere, right? So that's a terrible way of summarizing it, but that is a good way of capturing the general philosophy, whereas there's been an accelerated radical shift to local needs. Most congregations I know could take all of their resources, not just financial resources, but all of their assets and go right into their backyard and still not meet the needs. Yeah. They've identified some things. And I think what most of my colleagues, myself included, what we were not trained for is to know how to find those available resources to do that work and to know how to go about those relationships and conversations. The way that you describe it perfectly aligns with my experience in this work, which is there actually is a lot of resource available. We just had to help people identify it.
I don't think that religious leaders are being called into service on boards and commissions and committees in their own communities in the way that they used to be. So we have, I think, increased awareness of the need for diversity and inclusion on boards, commissions, and committees. But I don't think that the leaders of those groups are necessarily thinking of religiosity as a form of diversity. And that's something we can raise in consciousness by saying, you know, in fact, there is another sector here with important diversity, and bring us into the conversation as well. But in part, we have to get out and volunteer and get to know folks for those invitations to start coming back toward us.
Yeah, it really does all come back to the long-term relationship building and paying attention to what's right in your backyard.
There are some very clear, deep needs, as you referred to, and very complex needs that no one congregation is going to be able to address in our own communities. Among these, affordable childcare, senior care, affordable housing, creation care. But all of those are concerns that other organizations, non-religious organizations, philanthropic and community organizations are deeply engaged with. And that sense of being overwhelmed and unable to do anything can partly be alleviated by not trying to do it all yourselves, but forming those collaborations.
Well, and also being honest about what it is that you offer to the community that's unique and valued.
Yes.
You mentioned the role of spirituality in health. And I was also thinking, as you're going through this list of needs, at the top of a lot of lists for folks in our country, when you ask them what their concerns are for their children, for example, it's mental health.
Right.
So I think about the relationship of spaces for spiritually enriched mental health in a community. It's been great to see pastors and congregations start to undertake that work as well.
Yeah.
And I say that as hopefully an encouragement to listeners that there are resources for these things. There are people who care about these things. And there are a lot of organizations and people with resources who are looking for places to offer their support.
Yes. Yes, very much. But there needs to be an attitude of experimentation and a willingness to share learnings and share failures with one another. So that we aren't alone in it, but we also aren't giving up on it.
Elizabeth, widening the lens again, back to just the shifts in giving, what relationship does that have to religious participation in communities in general?
That's a great question, Adam. I think we don't know enough about the connections, but there does seem to be a connection. religious participation is one of the highest predictors of giving and volunteering. So if we see declines in religious participation and in particular forms of religious identity, that probably is related to some of the declines in certain forms of giving. There's a relationship there that needs to be explored. But this also means that congregations are crucial to the solutions. Mm-hmm. So there is a national commission that is focused on generosity, that is asking what's happening to generosity in American society. And wisely, they have an entire task force that's looking at the relationship between faith and giving. And one of the findings of that task force, I've been fortunate to be part of it, is that we need to help religious leaders understand that what they're experiencing in changes in generosity in their own setting, they're not alone in experiencing. And also the normative teaching and development of giving practices in congregations is really helpful and can be part of the solution.
You've alluded to a few resources or task forces or other things like that. I imagine that some people listening to our conversation are wondering, okay, what do I need to be paying attention to? How do I know where the money is? So there's part of that is just building relationships, but I think you and I are both aware of a few resources that people should just be following, not just about trends and shifts in philanthropy, but also just what's out there and available.
Well, I think if an organization, a congregation, or an individual wants to think about what are the resources, I think we have to start with our own and really look at what resources do we as a congregation have. And there, I think there's a lot of creative thinking going on right now. Congregations are realizing, wow, we have these buildings, we have these lands, we have these endowments, designated funds that may no longer quite align with our mission and ministry. And how do we move? What do we do? How do we live generously and faithfully with those? So one resource I want to point folks towards is a story collection Lake Institute on Faith and Giving has developed. It's called the Faithful Generosity Story Shelf, and it's stocked with at least 40 and growing short vignettes of congregations who have done really creative things with the land, the buildings, the funds that they have, giving them, sharing them, selling them, repurposing them to align deeply with their sense of mission and ministry. So that's one place to look. There are, in many communities, there are local foundations, community foundations, and others. I would start researching them, finding out what they're interested in, reaching out, having a conversation, going to any events that are being offered. I would certainly sign up for Lake Institute on Faith and Giving's newsletter, Insights, because we often share research and practices and educational offerings that are valuable for exploring the relationship between faith and giving on a changing landscape. And then the Ministry Collaborative will undoubtedly be doing amazing things around every corner on these topics. So sign up for those as well.
Yeah, it's nice of you to say that. I have been surprised over the years and how many conversations I end up with pastors in our network who are just looking for avenues to explore grants that are available or other ideas for how to make some of the connections you just described. Elizabeth, that's a great way to tie this together in some really concrete ways. I think there's obviously a lot more we could dig into, but I really appreciate this overview, not just of the work that you're doing, but also just I think people feel less alone when they hear that others are experiencing these shifts in very complex ways. And I appreciate you naming that for folks. So thank you again for such a stimulating conversation.
Well, Adam, thank you so much. It all begins with a relationship. And I'm very grateful for this relationship and this conversation with you today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.